The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This is Hermes Conrad, bureaucrat level grade 36. And you are listening to the Canned Air Podcast. Now stop it and get back to work.
They talking comics, pop culture, talking all that. Movies, TVs, toys, video games, man. It's going down at the Retro Round Table, man. You know we probably got a voice actor on the show. Maybe even got a screen actor, man, you never know. Jeremy going off on the Ninja Turtles, Jack's on the ticks. Randy about to make it about Randy video games, man, that's how you know this is.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
And I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And our guest today, through his art, has brought to life such characters as the Silver Surfer, She-Hulk, Star Wars droids, X-Men, the list goes on, but he's probably best known for his work on The Phantom and Superman. We welcome comic book and comic strip artist Keith Williams to the show. Keith, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, no, thank you for inviting me.
We're going to have a good time today in our Retro Roundtable. We're going to be talking about sidekicks, some of our favorite, maybe even least favorite. We've done this before on the show, but boy, have I got a modified list I'm excited to go through here.
And
I'm
excited. So is mine.
Okay, cool. I was hoping. And then after that, we're going to turn our full attention over to Keith and talk more about his amazing career. But before we do all that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you like what we're doing, want to show your support, for $5 a month, you can get access to the Canned Air Patreon pod over at patreon.com/CannedAirPod. There's a big catalog of shows over there, so very small price to pay for a lot more extra content and helping your boys out over here. What else? The song you heard at the very beginning of the episode was done for us by Phil Buck and Cheel Neal, the Canned Air theme, so I hope you guys enjoyed that. I know I got the biggest kick out of that when they sent that along. So big thanks to them, and I'm sure our listeners are going to be hearing more of that in the future. If you guys want to give us a call here at the show, 614-254-3332. You can either call or send us a text message. Don't worry, we're not going to answer, so no awkward conversations there. You can just leave a voicemail, say hi, say you hate the show, say you have an idea for the show, anything you want. We want to hear it. So again, 614-254-3332. Gentlemen, what am I forgetting?
Maybe that's why they won't leave a message, because they know we won't answer.
You think so?
Hey, I don't know. Maybe we'll answer.
I'm going to stick to this rule so far.
press your luck.
I don't want the awkward conversation. So, how's the weather there?
But hey, if you're up at about 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, check us out on Redline Radio. We are the syndicated show over there in the mornings. And give us some love on there.
There it is. Lots of different places and ways to check out your favorite Canned Air podcast. Anything else, gentlemen?
Let's do it.
Let's kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Here we go!
All right, our favorite sidekicks from throughout pop culture. Jack, kick us off.
All right. So I just saw, well, the other week, the new movie Scoob. And okay. This sidekick came to light as probably one of my favorites because he's a sidekick that actually makes his boss, I guess you would call him, actually worth it and a little bit better. And mine is Muttley, Dick Dastardly's.
Yeah. All I can hear is that laugh.
Yeah. And that it was great because, like, the whole movie, Dick Dastardly, Muttley's not with him. And later on, spoiler alert, when Muttley finally shows back up, it makes he's like, I don't know. It just puts like the peas taste better because there's two of them in the pot. I guess. I don't know.
Jack, you've been up in Marion way too long, man.
I need to get out of here.
400.
But he'd always sit there and just like he didn't badmouth him because Dick Dastardly would always be like, Muttley, go do this. And he'd just walk away being like, brack, 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 brack. Yeah. And then he would laugh.
Why even put up with this shit if you're so disgruntled? Why stick around?
Yeah. Anything bad that would happen to Dastardly, Muttley would sit there and do that wheezy laugh at him, just like making fun of him. So, yeah.
I can't do it, but that's all I've got. That's the best I've got.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's my pick for sidekick.
Very good, very good. Keith, how about you?
Was thinking about it, and I figured Rick Jones, who's the sidekick to like a lot of people in Marvel Comics, the Hulk, Captain America, Captain Marvel.
Yes, yes, yes.
And he was the mascot to the Avengers. So.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Rick Jones originally was pushed out of the way by Bruce Banner, and then Banner took on the gamma radiation. Because I do remember there being like a Marvel What If where Banner didn't push him out of the way, and then Rick Jones had become the Hulk.
Oh, yeah, right.
Something like that. And like his body.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
his body wasn't able to handle the gamma radiation like Bruce was for some reason. I can't remember. It's been so long, but.
Right.
I could be mistaken on those details. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to steal the conversation away from you.
Oh, no. That's all right. That's interesting. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
But the Hulk. That's right. That's how it all started.
Yeah,
and he actually brought the Avengers together, I believe, too. You know, like along with Loki.
So. Is that right? I didn't know that.
I think so. Mickey, I think he was. That's one of the reasons, I guess, why he became the mascot of the Avengers. So.
350 episodes in and still learning something. I love it.
Yeah, really.
Well, yeah. Check me though. That's okay. You can check.
Has he been in the MCU yet?
No, not to my knowledge.
Haven't seen him yet.
No.
They should put him in there.
Yeah, it sounds like he's a pretty big part of everything.
No, absolutely. You know, like, I mean, he was Bucky for a long time with Cap, so.
Yep.
I would love to see, I mean, I already know they have the Edward Norton Hulk movie, but I'd like to see more Hulk movies with Mark Ruffalo. And, you know, maybe if they did that, that would be an entry point for Rick Jones into the MCU. But at this point, I can't see that happening.
Yeah, they can't do that, can they? You know, no. They don't totally own the Hulk, I guess.
It's frustrating.
Yeah.
I guess he was mentioned in The Incredible Hulk and The Avengers, apparently. I'm looking at it.
Really?
Yeah, I have no idea where that name could even popped up. It might have just been just an aside voice. Someone in the background just throws out Rick Jones, just enough to be out there. So I don't know.
He said it.
Now I'm gonna have to look at all my movies again.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, go through them all with a fine tooth comb just to never find it. I'll miss it even when I'm paying attention. Guarantee it. All right, Randy, that brings us over to you.
Okay, so kind of playing off that, I was actually Bucky from Captain America was on my list. I had, growing up, I had those Marvel video VHS tapes, like the cartoons they did probably back in, the 70s?
Mm-hmm.
And I had one with Captain America, and it was two episodes. In the first episode, it was Rick Jones, and Cap got all bent out of shape because he found the Bucky costume and put it on. And I just remember that kind of blew my mind as a kid, thinking like, wow, like sidekicks could actually die and get replaced.
Yeah. And once again, me and Randy have a same entry on our list.
I need almost to just start had going him on there
before Randy every week, I think, to reclaim my spot. But no, that was a very good pick. A very good pick.
Bucky that always comes to my mind is the cover where Captain America's all upset because Bucky's using drugs.
I can't.
It makes me laugh so bad. I don't know, because he's just like, Bucky's on drugs. It's so horrible, and it was super impactful then, but it, at the same time, it always cracks me up.
I wonder if that's one of the books that they went against the comic code to publish, because I remember there being several books like that where they were trying to tackle drug use and stuff, and the comic code was like, no, you can't do that, and some, you know, there were times they just pushed it out anyway.
Yeah, sure.
They did that with the Speedy. The Red Arrow and Green Arrow too, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and Harry Osborn.
That's right.
Also, yeah. They had the old drug issue with him. Yeah.
I think it was more impactful with Red Arrow for me because I thought he was cooler than Bucky.
Can't argue with reason like that.
Yep. He's cooler.
Do you have any idea what kind of narcotics Bucky was involved with?
I think it was cocaine.
Was it really?
The cocaine. I don't know.
I'm trying to think of him because, I mean, he had a very just kind of a dorky outfit when he was just Bucky the Sidekick before he came Winter Soldier, you know? Am I wrong?
Blue shirt with red collar.
Yes. It's him coming back from the bathroom with powder under his nose and on his collar and shit.
Bucky, when'd you grow a mustache? What? Oh,
you know, it definitely wouldn't have been a joint because he would have just been like chilling back, right?
I'll sit this one out. Yeah.
Those combos ads in the old comic books would have meant a whole lot more if that was the case.
We're starting to see where his real superpower came from. All right. I guess my first pick would be in the old Ninja Turtle cartoon. There was, and I tried to find this kid's name online, and I'm sure that somebody out there knows it, but I couldn't find it. He was a kid, a small kid who had learned of the turtles' existence and worshipped the ground they walked on. So he, you know, fancied himself his own bandana, and he had a trash can lid that he had put on his back with a belt fashioned like a shell. And I think he showed up in a few episodes, but he would always kind of dip in and save them when there was no one else to save them. But he was always kind of the entry point because, of course, I can't be a mutated turtle that lives in the sewer. But damn it, I can put a trash can lid on my back and help some out if I ever come across them.
Who was that? I vaguely remember that.
He was like a little blonde-haired kid. I can't remember, but
he didn't really have a name.
Well, he had a name. I just couldn't find it when I looked online. I didn't know how to search. I just kept searching dumb blonde kid turtles. Nothing came up. But yeah, I just I just remember him being kind of irritating, but at the same time, he was the entry point for me as far as imagination went, me morphing into that world, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, we are back over to Jack.
So the next one is from He-Man. He-Man's sidekick. It almost went two different ways with it, being Orko. Mm. But I don't know. He wasn't always there with him. He was there only ever there once in a while. And most of the time, he would end up screwing stuff up more than anything, which I guess a sidekick can be the comic relief. But I ended up going with his trusty steed, Battle Cat.
Oh, trusty indeed.
Yeah.
Yes. Good old Cringer.
Or a big puss before. Yeah. Yeah. He did not too much. He was more just a growl to agree with him, I think, most of the time. Right, Battle Cat, right. That kind of thing.
Was it?
Was he like a coward in his alter ego?
Yeah. Yeah. He was just a small cat. Well, big, small cat, but he was a big, big chicken. Put that gnarly looking saddle and helmet on him, and he grew three times the size. He was pretty badass.
I don't know if you guys remember on the episode of The Toys That Made Us where they talk about the creation of He-Man and the toys and stuff, that the way Battle Cat even came to be was that they needed an inexpensive vehicle or something for the He-Man toy, and they just happened to have this, I think this is how it was, like a mold of like this like cat from like a zoo animal line that he happened to just fit on top of. So they just painted him green, threw a saddle on him, and Battle Cat was born.
Oh, man.
It's so funny how in the 80s, you know, stuff like He-Man and, I don't know, G.I. Joe, Mask, stuff like that, cartoons that were just put together solely to sell toys and didn't have a lot of thought put into the story can still be so influential and memorable. You know what I mean? It was like they were making gold accidentally.
Just like the Micronauts?
Oh, yeah.
Sectors? Those.
Oh, yeah.
So many examples. I just can't think of them, but... Yeah, it's funny. And it, you get a different caliber of cartoon now because the people that grew up inspired by those cartoons are now the ones making them. And I think a lot more thought and effort goes into them. Not that I don't watch a whole lot of cartoons, so maybe I'm wrong. But
Well, I was watching cartoons back in the 60s, so, you know. I got to see the old stuff. Superman, Batman, Aquaman, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The Looney Tune characters, yes, that was me.
That's when it was the best. That's when it was.
Now the toys are made after the cartoons. It's not just a toy for the kid to have. Right. And they got to put the story together after.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a different world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
All right, that brings us back over to Keith.
Yes. Oh. Okay. So there's always the favorite, Robin. Batman and Robin the boy hostage. Here, Robin, you wear the red and yellow costume. I'll be in the black and gray at night and go fight criminals. So, you know, you can fight them, and I'll come around the back and hide in the shadows and stuff. You know,
no, that's stick not out too like tight. A sword asking. Asking. It's not tight. It's not tight.
Yeah.
I thought that Robin brought the lightness into Batman, you know, like at the beginning when Batman was throwing people off of roofs and shooting them and stuff like that. It wasn't until Robin came in that you saw a different side of Batman, not being totally psychotic.
Didn't he like tie someone up by their neck and then attach them to a helicopter or a plane and send it off in the air or something?
Oh, well, I don't exactly remember that one, but I can believe it.
Oh yeah, he was brutal.
Yeah,
that was Jason Todd Robin, right?
Yeah, that's a whole different Robin. Yeah, that's the one that tried to steal the wheels off the Batmobile, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I love the newest incarnation, Damian Wayne. He's been really cool to watch.
I've liked him too. Yeah.
Didn't he poke his finger through somebody's head?
I would believe that. Yeah. I
mean, he's serious.
He is a 10-year-old assassin. He is.
Yeah, crazy. That's right. Ra's al Ghul. Yeah.
Yeah.
Taught him how to fight. So.
It's funny. All the Robins have really brought. Left their own mark on the universe. It's hard to say any one of them was horrible, at least for me.
Damian's got to show another side of Batman because Damian wants to kill everybody. And he's got to be like, no, you can't do that. Like, you used to be like this a long time ago.
It's very much the Eddie Brock and Venom relationship in that newest movie. He's like, no, we don't kill. We don't kill.
But, I know we've talked about it on the show before, but I really love the dynamic of when Dick Grayson was Batman there for a little bit, and his kind of carefree personality paired with Damian Wayne's like really serious Robin.
Yeah.
Total switch around. Yes. Yep. Yes. But I like Damian too.
Yeah.
I even like that they brought back Jason, you know, like as the Red Hood. right? Yeah. He's the Red Hood.
Oh, yeah.
After being killed by the Joker. So, very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's some good stuff. Good story writing right there. All right. That was Keith. That brings us back over to Jack.
Me again. All right. My last one.
Or no. That's Randy. I'm sorry. It brings us over to Randy.
It's all right. hopefully you don't have this one on your list too, Jeremy, but being a huge DuckTales and Darkwing Duck fan growing up, Launchpad McQuack.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
A sidekick so good, he couldn't be contained to one show.
Exactly.
That's how you have to look at it, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and as incompetent as he seemed on the regular, he always seemed to get the job done.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the new DuckTales, he's not quite as incompetent, is he?
I think so.
I don't know that, actually.
If I remember, he's still crash landing everywhere, and he spends the duration of the adventure getting the plane unstuck while everyone else is out fighting treasure hunters and whatnot.
I haven't seen enough of him to remember.
Yeah, I was watching a couple episodes there, and I don't remember seeing him on it, so I don't know.
I know one thing that they did in that show that was pretty cool was Darkwing Duck in the new DuckTales universe was a TV show. And well, how was it? The new guy who was the TV show that like we watched as kids is the show that I guess exists in that universe. And the guy who played him is just like a, I guess, kind of like an Adam West character, like a glorified actor. And they have rebooted the series with this new young actor to portray Darkwing. And the original guy who portrayed Darkwing that we watched when we were kids got wicked pissed and drove crazy about it. And he is who becomes NECA Duck.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. If that all made sense. There were a lot of ducks in that paragraph there.
A lot of twists and turns.
Yeah.
It's cool when they take stuff like that and kind of bend it and refresh it a little bit.
Absolutely. Gives more meaning to the reboot, I guess. It's not just the same recycled stuff. They actually put some history into it, so it makes it's easier to eat, I guess.
Takes care of us mom and dads who are watching it with the kids.
Yeah. That's true. All right, let's see. My next pick is going to have to be, and it's hard to even say she's a sidekick, but I guess she would be considered an Hit Girl from the Kick-Ass movies.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Now, she is just, in the comics, in the movies, so much freaking fun. And I guess Kick-Ass really is her sidekick looking at it. But since the movie and the comic is called Kick-Ass, you know, and she was definitely Big Daddy's sidekick at one point. But, man, I mean, mm-hmm. You're hard-pressed to find a better sidekick, right?
Right.
Oh, absolutely. She's the sidekick that's the business end, not the comic relief part of it.
I would love to see either a comic or a show or a movie of her in adulthood. Because if she's this lethal at 8 years old, imagine what she's going to be at 30. Yeah, <that's crazy>. Unstoppable.
I don't think she'd have any remorse. Not like she had much to begin with anyway.
No,
she'd just be straight destroy.
Remorse was killed when she was a child.
I mean, she doesn't have any superpowers, right? Do you think she'd even like be functional in adulthood as much as she's putting her body through?
That's an interesting point.
Oh, like she's destroyed her body through her childhood and teenage years of fighting.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends on her hip and joint doctors. But I really dig her. The end of Kick-Ass 3, the comic was really good because Kick-Ass hung up his outfit. He kind of gave up, went back to his normal life, and she hit the road and left town, and it shows her like taking on a new sidekick, which is going to be the next Kick-Ass. So Kick-Ass has kind of become her Robin, you know?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
It should have been called Hit Girl, because she's the one that you remember the most after the end of the movie. You're in so awe of her badassery. Kick-Ass, you're just kind of like, yeah, the guy in the green.
Yeah, but the reason Kick-Ass is relatable is because he's doing what any person who's ever read comics has always thought, well, like,
right.
Why aren't there superheroes? Like, I can do this, you know, like. So we're seeing why we shouldn't do it.
Through yeah. But if you did, there might be someone that can help you.
That's true. That's true. All right. That brings us back around to Keith.
Oh, no. Okay. The Joker and Holly.
Ooh.
Hey, nah.
She is
Holly most... Quinn, who, like, grew from the animated series. And is now out in the world on her own now. You know, she developed during all these years, you know, to finally to be even in a way more popular than the Joker, mm-hmm. having her own comic books and her own cartoon, which I love. And she's an incredible character.
And over the years seems to have become just as, if not more psychotic than the Joker.
Yeah, yeah. But they think of her as a hero.
Isn't that weird? Isn't that crazy how that that transition has happened?
Yeah.
I don't get it, but I suppose I don't have to.
I guess not. I don't know what she did, actually, to become, you know, like a real hero, you know, like that they wouldn't think, well, after you've helped us with this, you're going to go back to Arkham. You know, I mean, I just don't know.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the Birds of Prey movie, which wasn't great, but I guess in a way she was kind of a hero there. It's just going against the evil that's going against her, I guess, to win in the end and make everything better.
But for her.
Yeah, yep.
Right.
She's kind of becoming like DC's answer to Deadpool almost.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
That's an interesting look at it. I didn't think of it like that.
Because she can be the kind of straight laced, but then at the same time, totally out there nuts and silly.
Super destructive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And always seems to survive. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't they like just walk away from a helicopter crash in that Suicide Squad movie?
Suicide Squad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Indestructible. Wow.
Yeah.
Lucky girl. All right.
Something in that acid. I don't know.
All right, that brings us back around to Randy.
Oh, okay. Did Jack go?
No. Actually, I don't think he did. Randy, go ahead. No, I'm just kidding. No, Jack.
Well, my last one, it was a hard pick between which one was actual sidekick, but I think I figured out which one it was. And he goes by the name of Brian.
Okay.
Griffin.
No.
Oh no.
There we go.
I knew that just the name would throw you guys off.
I don't know how good of a sidekick he is. He's always trying to have sex with Peter's wife, so
yeah, I wasn't sure if it was gonna be Stewie was be the sidekick or if it'd be the other way around.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a hard call.
They're kinda interchange, yeah.
Yeah, I don't have an answer.
Actually, yeah, it really depends on what's going on. That they it could be either or.
They're like Brian the Wonder Twins. There's no, neither one's the sidekick. They're equally as important.
Yeah. Depending on what they want to do, I guess the other one follows and is the sidekick part of it, I guess.
Right.
I guess that one wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. That's not how it went out more. Arthur from The Tick. I never pulled him out before.
Oh, I was waiting for him to come out.
No, I wasn't going to pull him out for this one. I think I pulled him. I think I picked him before when we did this.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked to Arthur. Oh, he's stolen a lot of our conversation over the years.
Yeah.
That's for sure. All right. Now, Randy.
All right. Last one I have, and I don't know if you guys would count these as sidekicks or not. The droids from Star Wars, C-3PO and R2-D2.
Ardu 5-3.
He was the red one in the background.
Right? He was the one that blew up.
Yeah, great sidekicks indeed.
Yeah, I don't think there hasn't been any Star Wars property other than Mandalorian that hasn't had at least one or both of them in it, right?
This is true.
I thought you were going to say a droid sidekick, but With R2 or C-3PO, they've been in everything.
Well, they chronicalized everything. They're the ones that saw everything.
Yeah.
Right. Even when they split up, you know, they got to see everything that was happening in the Star Wars universe. I love those characters.
Yeah, and I really like how in this latest movie, C-3PO, as well as Chewie, got great spotlights on them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They weren't just props in the background for these new films. They actually got spotlight on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I teared up with C-3PO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When he was about to get his brain lobotomized.
Yeah. Because, yeah, she just pushed it right in his face. You know the odds better than anybody. Do we have a choice? You know, what's he going to say when his whole life has been, look at the odds, look at the odds.
And they're actually listening to the odds this time, too, instead of just kind of brushing them away and telling them to shut up.
Yeah.
Ow.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed what they did, with him in this last film. Because in, like, Force Awakens, he just kind of popped in here and there just for a quick one-liner or something. And Last Jedi, I just feel like he was just kind of standing around. I could be wrong, but...
So, I don't know if you guys ever saw it, but there was a cartoon series for the droids, for R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you guys have seen that? I had a VHS of it growing up, and I'd never heard, like, anything else about it since then.
I mean, I heard of it. I knew there were toys that, if you can still find one card, are extremely valuable.
Yeah, very valuable. Mm-hmm. I don't remember much of it, but I do remember the cartoon because it went along with the Ewoks cartoon, too.
Right, the Ewoks, yes.
Okay. The only thing I remember,
same time.
The only thing I remember about the droid show was, like, they were paired up with somebody that looked like a really skinny Rambo, like, running around doing stuff, like, on Tatooine, I think. Shock.
I'm trying to remember.
I vaguely remember.
I really can't remember an episode. I mean, but I remember they were on. I remember the Ewoks more.
Yeah.
Okay. I just am aware of them. I never watched either of them, to be honest.
Fair enough.
So shut up.
It's kind of weird. The droids cartoon. 3PO actually had eyelids, and his pupils moved around so he could emote better in it.
That's right.
Well, I tell you what, this haunted C-3PO on my shelf in here is about to grow eyelids and have moving pupils. This thing's freaking me the hell out, let me tell you.
It's heat activated. My sister found an article talking about it.
For real?
It changes with heat.
Wow. Oh, Jesus. And now I need to take that post down. What an idiot I am.
No, a lot of people are liking it. Because I don't know how many people really have that one, because it's pretty hard to get, right?
From what I understand, but man, I didn't know that. So I'm about to put a lamp in front of him now. It's just crazy. You'd be sitting here working on the show and look over, and all of a sudden his yellow eyes have turned red. You're like, oh, Jesus.
Start speaking Sith at you.
Let the power of Christ compel you.
I wonder what a-hole toy maker thought that was a good idea, put stuff like that in toys and not put it on the packaging,
just
to freak kids out.
Yeah, no really.
Shit. I'm about to pick it up again and read the back of it, but I swear it doesn't say it on there. I was about to bury this thing with a crucifix and chicken bones. Seriously. I was about to be rid of it.
Oh, damn it.
On that note, I think we can close the retro roundtable and just move into talking with Keith more about his career. Keith, thank you so much again for being here. I hope you're having a good time.
And,
just really excited to hear about how someone who's worked on some of the most influential characters in comic history gets his start in comics.
I wanted to do comic books for almost my whole life, actually. My grandmother gave me my first comic book when I was a kid. It was a Batman comic book. Had Batman and Robin's face in webs, and the bat phone was ringing, but nobody was answering it. That was my very first comic that I had in my hand, and I loved it. My grandmother would then, every week, she would get me more and more comic books, and just said, wow, it's fun reading these things. I'd like to try and draw them too, you know? And I started with, seriously, stick figures, you know, and worked my way up from there. Was doing comic strips for my school at Miracle of Heaven. And just went on from there. Got into high school and took a whole mess of major art classes. And, you know, like it was just something I was just continuously driven by the comic books. You know, like I was a comic book collector and I liked to draw them. And I had a friend of mine that was there writing stories, and I would draw the stories, and he would do some drawing too. And we'd be messing around, you know, like in our apartment building, you know, like just creating stuff. You know, like I said, in high school with the major art programs and also doing school shows and stuff like that, I'd be painting backgrounds, you know, like scenery on sets and stuff like that. I had an advisor that in the 10th grade asked me to do a contest that was involving pollution. So I created this creature that this superhero had to fight to beat, and I kind of like won, you know, like first place for that. I thought that was really cool, and did the yearbook for the high school also, and they really liked that. It was very unusual. I had a Viking holding up the school, because our mascot was a Viking. So he was there holding up the school, and had a comet going in the background and clouds and stuff like that. And you know, they really liked that too. And it just got me more and more into wanting to, you know, like do this as a living. Went to school visual arts. The main reason why I went there was because Will Eisner was the teacher there. He created the spirit way back, and yeah, believe me, I was in awe of this guy. Absolutely incredible storyteller, and he didn't want me in his class.
So, what? Why is that?
I was not of the caliber. I was not of the caliber of some of the other guys that was in that class. You know, like I definitely wanted to be in his class. I continuously harassed him. Finally, had the book, his graphic novel, Contract with God, and I brought that up to him and asked him for his autograph. You know, like, and then he said, "Oh, well, thank you." And while he was signing it, and I was in his I was in the classroom with him. You know, his students were around and everything. And he said, "You see, that's how you get into my class." So I actually did get into his class. It was amazing, you know. Like I didn't expect that, but yeah. The next term I was in his class, so I had him, and I also I'm trying to remember the other teacher that I was involved. It'll come to me. But Will was a great teacher. He was absolutely amazing. And he would ask us questions about how comic books were going and what was the new thing that was happening and all this. And like in the back of my mind, I kind of like knew he was just asking us these questions, but that he knew already, you know, what was going on.
He's testing your knowledge.
He's you know, testing us, and, you know, like also, you know, like he wanted to, you know, like hear our, you know, like what we thought about things too. You know, like it was just amazing. Our artwork, when we would show him stuff that we did for his class, he would take out a gigantic piece of lead, and he would then proceed to draw over our artwork to show us how things should change, you know, like how things should, you know, like the storytelling should be like this, like, and we would be horrified. Okay, we'd be horrified because he drew on our artwork. How dare he? How dare he? So what we ended up doing was we bought him a pad of tracing papers so that he could draw over it that way. Little did we know. Little did we know we were, you know, like really a bunch of idiots, you know. We should have jumped, you know. He was drawing on our artwork.
Yeah.
We were getting original artwork from Will Eisner.
Will, I love you. I look up to you, but quit drawing on my shit.
Quit drawing on my stuff. Hey, you know, I mean, come on. Artist of temperament, so funny. You know. but unfortunately, I do not have any of the stuff that he actually, you know, like, corrected anymore. It disappeared, and I really regret that.
Well, at the time, was he? I guess he was at the time as big and influential.
Yes, he was. Yeah. He was. The spirit came back out again at the time. I think Kitchen Sink was putting it out, and Warren Magazine was doing all the reprints on the spirit. And he was very hot. And then he was creating the graphic novel. Wow. You know, like he was pretty hot. He was amazing. After I did his class, he sent us on a field trip, you know, like on our own, of course, to Marvel Comics. To show us stuff and trying to get into the business. And like, I was like, oh, they're gonna love my stuff. Like, there's no way they're not gonna love my stuff. I had Jim Shooter come out. He came out. I was in the lobby of Marvel. This one, they were at 387 Park Avenue. And he looked at my stuff. He was really nice. You know, he's really nice. And he said, you know, you got something going on there, you know, but we'd like you to look more like this. And he pointed at a picture of the Hulk that they had in the lobby that was done by, I think, like Jack Kirby and John Romita. He said, you know, you gotta have your style look a little bit more like that. You know, like, and I was like going, okay. Believe me, looking back now, my stuff, I'm surprised that he even looked at my stuff.
Oh, you're probably being too hard on your work.
I'm surprised. I mean, I took it back home, and I took it to heart, you know, like, and I was upset, but I worked on it, and next time I went up there, I got to see John Romita, and the other time, I think it was Marie Severin that I was actually able to show myself to, and when I was with John, he would he looked at my stuff and he said that, you know, yeah, it's just, like, I got possibility there, but I still wasn't really ready. But he was like showing me these tricks that he was doing, like with a ruler, how he would use a brush and a ruler to get a straight line. I could not believe how he was doing this stuff. You know, like, absolutely amazing. It took me so long to learn how to do that. You know, like, after he showed me, I said, yeah, how do you do that trick? He said, what trick? You know, this is just the way I do stuff, you know? And I, wow, you know, I mean, the guy was absolutely amazing. But I actually finally got my start in the business while I was working at my old high school as a paraprofessional. And Howard Perlin, who's the son of Don Perlin, was was working on one of the school shows, and, you know, like, I was helping him out with perspective on a backdrop. Backdrops are usually like 16 feet by God knows how long, or whatever. But I can need a little bit of help on that, so I did. And, you know, we got talking, and he said, you know, like, would you like to meet my father? You know, like, Don Perlin, he worked at Marvel Comics. You know, and you said you were interested in doing stuff. And I said, yeah, sure. You know, I said, where do you guys live? And little did I know that they only lived like about two blocks away from me whole time.
Really?
Yeah. So, I lived in this project, Glenwood Houses, and they lived two blocks away. So I was able to go over there and meet with him. You know, we talked for a while. He's a great guy. He gave me some penciled artwork because, you know, like, I also showed him stuff that I was doing, you know, like, that I was inking. As a matter of fact, I showed him the Marvel that test tryout book that had John Romita Jr.'s stuff in it in blue line, and I inked the blue line on that, and that's what I showed Don Perlin, and he liked what he saw there. But, you know, like, he gave me some stuff to bring home, and I would work on it on vellum, which is like the worst thing in the world to it's like tracing paper, but it does not absorb ink at all. So it's like you could put ink down on it and it will just sit there for like an hour before it would dry.
It was
a nightmare. Plus the fact that it was hard to look through because it was kind of like a frosted kind of, kind of, you know, like a thing, you know, like a piece of paper. So I would, you know, like go over to his house like almost like every week, you know, like show him stuff. And finally, one day he asked me if I was interested in doing backgrounds for Mike Esposito up at Marvel. He was doing a Marvel team up at the time. And I said, yeah, sure, you know. So ended up getting work as a background guy. And I was doing okay with that. And I was, you know, like actually making money. And at the same time, I was still working at my old school, South Shore, as a paraprofessional during the day. So when I was doing my background stuff, it had to be in the evening at night, you know, like way into the night, so that I would be working at the school during the day, working on my backgrounds at night. I'd probably get to sleep at around 3 or 4 in the morning, maybe, and then I'd have to wake up at around 6 to get back to the school. It was a really crazy time then, you know, like trying to, you know, like handle both jobs. So by the time the summer came around, I just told the school, because I realized I was, you know, like doing stuff for, you know, like Mike Esposito and a few other people at the time, that, you know, like I could just like do this as a living, and I didn't have to do the paraprofessional stuff. So I quit that, and I became a full-time background artist for Marvel. And worked with Esposito, with Joe Sennett, bunch of other different guys, Jeff Isherwood, Andy Muschinski, Vince Coletta, you know, like lots of different people. So, you know, like I was able to be up there a lot, you know, because I was doing a lot of work, not getting too much sleep, but, you know, like, I mean, I didn't care, and really didn't. And after a while, I heard that John Romita was starting this group that would be art correction people, you know, but they would be people that are just starting out in the business, and he would be there to overlook things and, you know, like, teach us, you know, like how, you know, like to do things in the comic book world. And and when I heard that, I said, oh, I gotta be part of this. And I like continuously was bugging him about that every time that I saw him, you know, like whenever I went up to the company. And he, you know, like let me be the first guy that they used for that. So I was like the first Romita Raider for the art correction crew. And then the other guys came on, like Phil Lord. He worked, him and me worked together for a while, and Steve Geiger, and boy, you had people like Bud LaRosa. You even had people like was Adam Hughes there? I think Adam Hughes was one of the Raiders too. God, there was a lot of different people that came up after that point. But that was a great, incredible learning experience to, you know, like besides working on backgrounds for Esposito and Sennett, you know, like Sennett, who I really loved, because Sennett would not only, they would send me by Federal Express, they would send me, Sennett would send me the pages of things like the Avengers that he would be inking over with Al Milgram at the time. It was amazing seeing these pages. But the other amazing thing was that on attached to the page would be a check, like because it would be Joe Sennett who would, you know, like pay me to do backgrounds. It wouldn't be the company. So I would get the check even before I did the work.
That's intimidating.
It was amazing. I'll tell you, I learned so much, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, like I didn't mess up. Because <Sure. laughs> it was Joe Sennett, come on. But no, he was absolutely, he's an amazing person. You know, he is incredible. He's such a nice guy. He was so nice. I actually, at the time, I didn't really meet him personally. I was basically talking to him on the phone. That when I started to get regular work as an anchor, I had to, you know, start to turn him down. I didn't know how to do that, because every time, you know, like pages would come in, there was that check. Jeez, you know, he's so nice. He's giving me this stuff even before I say yes. You know, what am I going to do? But, But I finally had to bite the bullet with that, and because, like I said, I was slowly starting to get regular ink work, here and there, different offices. I was doing sectors. that was a fun one. Sectors and what else was I doing at the time? Transformers.
Wow.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. Transformers was crazy because, I was like thinking straight edges. no organic, there's not one organic thing. I was so happy when a human appeared. It was great.
Time to use the roller and paintbrush trick.
Oh my gosh. It was a way of just like stamping those characters onto the page, And the bad thing was that I didn't get to play with any of the toys. The pencilers got the toys, But the inker just inked whatever was there, So that was
a way out. Damn cool.
I'll tell you it was. It was. I had a good time. I was doing backgrounds for a long time. Finally, they asked me if I was interested in doing backgrounds for John Byrne, and I said, "Really?
Yeah.
X-Men John Byrne? You want me to do?" And he says, "Yeah, he's going to be doing. He's doing Alpha Flight, and he needs a guy to do his backgrounds." I said, "Well, okay." Okay, now that was, besides Joe, that was even more intimidating, because it was John Byrne, But he was absolutely amazing, because not only did I do backgrounds for him, but he gave me credit doing the backgrounds on the page. Wow. He actually had my name on there, so every issue that I did with him, my name was on there with it, which was unheard of. Because a lot of people use background artists, and I've worked with a lot of inkers, and my name never appeared on any of their pieces of work. And John was the only guy that did something like that, and I'm still grateful to him for that, for doing that for me. After that, we moved on to the Hulk, and then he took me with him over to Action Comics to do backgrounds for Superman, which was really great too. So I got to move over to another company and show my stuff there and everything, and mm-hmm. But after a while, then came the real regular work, Web of Spider-Man, Marvel stuff, Quasar, She-Hulk, Warlock, the Infinity Watch, Warlock Chronicles, lots of Thanos and stuff like that, which I'm still very appreciative of, because when the Infinity War saga came out in the movies, they started reprinting all the books, so you end up getting royalties for that.
Oh, nice.
No kidding. Wow.
Very. It was a very nice period of time.
I would say
the moment you saw Thanos' face in the movies, it's like, wow. It was. I was very happy about that. But so it was working for Marvel, working for DC, I know I'm talking too much right now. I'm just talking.
No, it's an amazing. It's just amazing to hear your journey. I mean, You've been taught by and given advice by so many of the greats. Who else has that knowledge under their belt, and then went on to work on so many great characters and properties? I mean, how amazing that one must be. How much fun.
It is total fun. There are days, of course, when you're working and it's really hard and you got the deadline and, it's the next day. And, if you don't do it, Virginia Romita, who was the traffic manager at the time, would kill you. But, even after all that, all the tension and all the, nail biting and all that stuff, it was great. It's a great learning experience. And I had a lot of people that were, talking to me and telling me how to do things the right way. Talk to people like Jack Abel and some of the other guys that would usually be hanging out up there at Marvel, and you learn how to do things on time, do it right, and that you're responsible, to get the work done, and to try and do it the best you can in the amount of time that you have, you know, because the inker would usually get sometimes what the inker would usually get as time would be about a month, but you would sometimes have to do 22 pages in 2 weeks.
Jeez.
So that's when the background artists come in. That's when the background artists come in. Because
hell.
Because you know, I mean I've done it by myself. I've done it on my own. But I am not Jack Kirby. I'm nowhere near that. I don't know how he does his stuff. I don't know how he did what he did. You know, I go a lot of the guys that are up there that can do stuff really fast and still put out an incredible product. You know, but yeah, you know, like, I mean, even when it was like when I felt like I was, you know, like my heart was like beating and I could feel it coming out of my throat because I knew, you know, like I would be up at around 6 o'clock in the morning after working all night long and knowing that, oh God, it's 6 o'clock. I got a few more hours before Marvel opens. I got to finish this stuff now.
Wow.
But you know, but even with all that, it was fun because it was what I wanted to do.
Sure. So if you love what you do, you're not working a day of in your life, right?
There you go. Man. I loved it.
Very cool. Very cool. And I know you've got a DeviantArt page people can check out, which we will link. But is there anywhere else people should be finding you? Do you have any social media handles or anything?
Instagram. Yes. Keith Williams Comic Book Art.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, so you can look at that, and you know, like Facebook. Sometimes the artwork that I do on Instagram bleeds over into Facebook. So, and that's Keith Williams. I forget what the number is. how to get on? Just put down Keith Williams. I'm sure there's like a billion Keith Williams on there, but you know, you'll find me.
You'll find it. You'll find it. It's the one with all the awesome Marvel and DC artwork on it, right?
Hopefully. Hopefully
it's awesome. I don't know.
It's awesome. I saw it. It's awesome. It's awesome. Keith, I want to thank you so much again for being here. We're going to have to do this again in the future.
Sure. Love to. Thank you, guys.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
You go to cannedairpodcast.com. You can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, check out some YouTube videos, and if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And once again, find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you like what we're doing, want to show your support and get a little bit back for said support, head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod. $5 a month gets you access to the Canned Air Patreon pod. Give us a call, 614-254-3332. Again, I'm not going to answer. I don't want awkward conversation. I mean, unless you want me to answer, like send me a text, say, hey, I'm going to call again, answer next time, then I'll think about it. But otherwise, just leave a voicemail or a text message. And, you know, anything you want to say, we want to hear it. 614-254-3332. And again, RedlineRadioLLC.com, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Get your fix of some retro canned air. Gentlemen, what am I forgetting? Anything?
I think that's it.
Yeah. That's it. And we're going to be going out on the same song I think we opened with, the Canned Air theme that once again Chill Neil and Phil Buck did for us, which was mighty nice of them. And I enjoy the heck out of it. And we're going to have to be playing it a lot more in the future, I would say. Right, guys?
I love it.
May even have to do a music video at some point.
Oh, good Christ. I don't know about all that. we'll talk, Randy. We'll talk. But I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And I'm Keith Williams.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone.
It's the Canned Air Podcast. They talking comics, pop culture, talking all that. Movies, TVs, toys, video games, man. It's going down at the Retro Roundtable, man. You know we probably got a voice actor on the show. Maybe even got a screen actor, man. You never know. Jeremy going off on the Ninja Turtles. Jack's on the ticks. Randy about to make it about video games. Man, that's how you know this is Canned Air. 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 Canned Air.
there? I thought you were grounded.
My parents are mean, so I'm running away from home.
Where are you gonna go?
I don't know yet, but that'll show them.
It sure will.
Shipwreck!
Parents just don't understand, and it gets lonely on the road, so be sure to listen to the Canned Air podcast.
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Then I don't know if you guys would count these as sidekicks or not, but the everybody okay over there?
Yeah, we're good.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They're able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.